So we're making better decisions, and the fruit quality should even be better on this next go around.
In the present, I need to evolve, I need to change lots of things.
Okay, I think a few times they asked me, Giovanni, do you have fun in what you're doing?
Well, you reinvent yourself, right? I think that's really where that begins and ends.
I think 18's legendary. It's going to go down in history.
I haven't made the same wine twice, have no intention of duplicating anything.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 347. This week we feature Alex Holman, winemaker at Notre Vue Estate, Sonoma.
This podcast is sponsored by Release Winery. Every wine tells a story. Each growing season, it's our goal to create an artisan Napa Valley wine of exceptional quality. Join us as the story of this ultra-limited wine continues. Learn more at releasewinery.com.
First thing I must say is to give Alex Holman a great deal of credit for meeting with us to do this interview. The winery tasting room caught fire the day before our meeting, but Alex agreed to meet with us anyway. Notre Vue Estate is located in the town of Windsor in Sonoma County. Since there was major activity cleaning up after the fire, we met at their outdoor tasting room on the hill just behind the winery. While Alex is the new winemaker at Notre Vue, he's been in the business for quite some time, and this is one crazy way to start a new job. You can hear Alex on our Vino Lingo segment defining the wine term native fermentation. I'm in Sonoma. I'm here with Alex Holman, and Alex is the winemaker at Notre Vue Estate. And how you doing?
Good, good. As well as can be expected.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but this is a very unique piece of property here. We quite a ride to get back here, about a mile and a half or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, what?
700 plus acres.
How do you find property like that? I mean, you know. Somebody stumbles onto it, or,
The first vineyards were planted here in 72. And so the original owners, we've retained historical name Balvern as one of our labels. And the property was known as Balvern Vineyards back in the 70s. And they were growing Alsatian whites.
What does Balvern relate to, do you know?
Yeah, it's a Germanic name, and there's a little controversy on that, but it's Village of Trees, I guess.
How many acres are you farming?
250. Right now, we've pulled some blocks out, so we're down to about 220 right now.
Wow, that's a lot. And how many cases are you doing?
We do roughly 4,000 to 6,000, and we're expanding, and so that's part of the plan, ultimate plan to any property like this where, you know, we were probably producing 700 tons and I'm bringing in only 150 to the winery. So if we, any grapes that don't get sold need a home. So then we develop a third tier or, different label to put all the grapes that don't get sold. And so, the intention is to get everything sold. And the more wine we make, the more control I have over the vineyards.
So unfortunately, we come a couple days after there was a fire in the tasting room.
That's correct.
Difficult situation for you, but I give you a lot of credit for meeting with us today and talk about this. So number one, thank you. But why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, there was some construction going on around the property, and then something caught fire in the evening. And at 9 o'clock, I got a call, get to the winery, the tasting room's on fire. And unfortunately, that building also houses all my barrels and all our case goods. So we have smoke damage or smoke residue throughout the entire building. And so we're now in cleanup mode and trying to identify what's good and what's bad. And it's a process. And We're going to make sure the science is right, and we're going to confirm and or deny what the status of everything is. So it's a pretty elaborate process.
Well, I wish you guys the best moving away from this and moving forward into, you know, what your next step is going to be, getting back to the vineyard, because, of course, we're at the beginning of the growing season. Well, not the beginning, I guess. We're well into it at this point.
Right in bloom. We've started bloom a couple weeks ago. We started bloom right when the rain hit. So we will probably have some bad fruit set in Chardonnay and Pinot, but yet to be determined.
So you're relatively, you're real new here.
Yeah.
But you have a history behind
March
you.
1st.
Yeah. Well, let's, before we talk about the current time, let's go back to your history. You said you've done 19 vintages?
19 vintages.
That's a pretty good amount. So how did you begin? I mean, was it a getting bit by the wine bug, wine family? What would it have been?
Yeah. I guess I define that as like I caught the fermentation bug as a home brewer in the 90s. In college, we made beer, and then I went to Fresno State, go Bulldogs. and so it was the genesis of the home brewing craze, and I really got into it. And I was an analytical chemist at the time, so it was all good. And, you know, it was a good hobby. And I decided, well, I need to get out of Fresno. As much as I liked it, my experience there, I'm from the Bay Area, so I need to get back. And so I'd been exposed to the wine program. My chemistry professor in grad school was one of the top enologists in the program. And so I even did my senior project on wine-related subject without having any interest in wine. And so I went back to the enology program and consciously got, you know, did a lateral transfer and became enologist at Golden State Vintners and making Christian Brothers Brandy at the old Chateau LaSalle.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah, it was, right. So it was a good way to transition into the business. I was in my 40s then, so it was... You know, definitely a career turn, and so I spent 3 vintages with Golden State in Fresno, and then I wanted to just get back to the Bay Area, and so I took an internship with Paul Hobbs, and did a harvest with Paul Hobbs.
What year would that have been?
2003. Yeah, and I actually opened up his Forestville facility. And I was the lab guy, and I set up the lab, purchased it, certified it, did all that. And then was pretty much running the crush pad at the time and just working harvest. And then I got a job in February of 2004 with Dry Creek Vineyard. And I spent the next 7-8 years with Dry Creek Vineyard and making a lot of Zin, Sauv Blanc, and Bordeaux varieties.
Good wines there too, I might add, especially in that period, yeah.
Yeah, well, we resurrected that winery. We brought it back to life. There's a lot of skeletons in that closet, but we won't won't go there.
Nah. So what led you to Notre Vieux?
I was asked to leave Keller Estate last year in April, and promptly 3 weeks later, ruptured my Achilles. So I went into a cast for 4 months, and during the time of, you know, hiring and the, you know, the hiring window. And so I ended up right before harvest getting a job with Rack and Riddle doing custom crush champagne. And I was their internal auditing winemaker. So I was auditing their practices and their SOPs and their certification and all that. And, as interesting as that is, it's not walking the vineyard making wine.
No.
And
but a good experience, though, I think.
Incredible, yeah. Scientific experience. The method champenois is an incredible process with infinite details. And So my scientific knowledge really helped me with that, and it's a very complicated process. And so, but it's not walking the vineyards and making wine. And so I kept my eyes open and applied for the job. And 75 applicants later, here I am.
Very nice.
Yeah, the last several years in the wine business, it's incredibly competitive. And so you have to have some chops.
Not bad. Now, the owners just came by and said hi, and the owners' names again are?
Bob and Renee Stein.
Very nice people. And they've had this winery for how long?
Bob has owned it since 93. And a lot of changes. They replanted pretty much all the vineyards. Moved a lot of topsoil around, redistributed. There's, you know, in the undulating flatlands, so to speak, you know, you get a lot of topsoil moving with the old farming practices. So sort of moved a lot of dirt back on the brows of the hills and whatnot. And that was done back in late 90s, early 2000.
You know, it's funny, though, when you say 93, you think, well, at first, that's not that long ago. No, it's actually quite some time ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were so many changes going on in the business at that time. There's always changes. But it's amazing to think about the length of time.
Right. I've been familiar with this property forever, so as long as I've been in Sonoma County, and buying grapes and having clients that bought grapes here. And so I was familiar with the area and really excited to really get involved. We have 16 different varieties here. You know, I cut my teeth in Central Valley making Christian Brothers brandy. So, you know, French Colombard's not that exciting. Albeit the Muscat is, but Dry Creek Vineyard, Sauvignon Blanc, Chardonnay, Zin, Bordeaux's. You know, that's what I learned how to make wine. And then for the last 10 years or so, I've been hyper-focused on Pinot and Chard. And you sort of get into your little niche and your little world, and you don't, you know, I'm reintroducing my love affair with tannins.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, that is the story here in Sonoma, generally speaking, Chardonnay and Pinot, but there are a lot of other grapes being grown out this way.
Right, correct. And this property is actually dual AVA, which no longer will happen. The TTB doesn't like borders crossing, but back in the back when these Russian River and Chalk Hill, and so we are in both.
Oh, no kidding. Oh.
So, right, and so, you know, when on the label of Chardonnay and Pinot, it's Russian River, but the Bordeaux, you know, Chalk Hill has more cachet. And actually, the science behind it, we have both soils, you know, in our lower flat areas where Pinot and Chard are grown, yeah, is alluvial fan soil, some clay, like indicative of the Russian River, and up on top is very volcanic. You can, top of the hill is 1,400 feet, and you can see straight across to Mount St. Helena, and so there's all the basalt and all the volcanic rock from that westerly face came this way.
You know, that's what's interesting about the space we're in. We're above where the tasting room and cellar is in this party area, tasting area, which is really cool. It's a, you know, you got a balcony looking out over this view. I can't even tell you how many miles we're looking at. This,
right,
this is a space.
You can see the Bay Bridge on a clear day.
Which today is not. It's clear here, but it's not clear out that way.
Right.
For all the time you've been in the business, for all these years, and I'm sure you've done plenty of interviews and press things, what is the question that you don't get asked that you would like to be asked?
Good question. Yeah, well, good question. Well, I guess that question that doesn't get asked enough, with my scientific background and chemistry-centric and knowing most subjects down to the molecular level, I have a great creativity side. And so the mesh of science and creativity and artistry is a concept that few people really want to talk about it. And you either have to be in one or the other. You have to be either spewing scientific nonsense but very romantic topics, or strictly science. And you know, there, it's a real challenge, you know, internally, to when to let go of one or the other. And you know, it's a constant battle inside you. And this business tends to be a little pretentious, and yeah, big shocker, that, you know, everybody wants to, you know all the intimate details and all the intimate detail. And I always joke that if I was an accountant, nobody would care what spreadsheet and or what database I was using, right?
That's true.
And but you know, the passion for making wine, and you know, I've been making alcohol my whole adult life, and so the nuances of that, you know, and how that, you know, alcohol has changed a lot in the last 20 years, that's for sure. Last 10, incredibly. And but yet we've been making wine for hundreds of years, thousands of years. But you know, I don't know many French winemakers. I don't drink a lot of French wine, but a lot of people say I remind them of French winemaking, only because you need to know more science to know what not to do, rather than just throwing the kitchen sink at everything. And there's so many things now. When I got into the business, there were very few adjuncts that you were allowed to put into wine. But now technology has chased it, so they've extracted infinite amounts of compounds. And so legally, you can only add something that derived from grapes. Well, when I got in the business, there wasn't much derived from grapes. Now the list is as long as can be. And so now the challenge is, what am I not going to add? You know, am I going to just use all the tools? Am I, you know, is using some tools cheating? You know, unfiltered, unfined has Velcorin. Velcorin's a carcinogen, but it breaks down to two simple compounds. So that breaking of the bond is what cleaves DNA. So you tell me, and it's all gone, and so it's nothing, but you know, how in your heart do you, so now you're, oh, I'm unfiltered, unfined, but I put something that's a hazardous waste. You know, I mean, you know, it's a hazardous compound into the wine to kill all the bacteria, so I don't have to worry about a filter. So, that's a real, you know, how do you resolve that scientifically, creatively? Does it really make a difference when you're tasting it? Do people notice? I'm practical that way. I'm not going to sit there and say I'm a super taster and I know all the nuances, and everybody needs to be at my level. You know, that's not what this is all about. It's about how it goes down your gullet. Right?
That's all it is.
You know?
I think that's the rub with the whole thing. You know, people want to become too analytical. People want to, again, put it on a, you know, pedestal. And in the end, it's an agricultural product. Drink it and enjoy it.
Yeah. A wise man told me once wine was made from fruit. So it tastes like fruit, not wood.
Yeah, that's the idea, isn't it? So let me ask you a question about the business in general. What makes you crazy about the wine business?
I guess what makes me crazy is the absolute notion of any subject. And another favorite expression is there's many roads to Nirvana. And what somebody says is the absolute necessary way to do things, or how something should taste, or what's good or what's bad. We do have to accept that wine and wine making and wine drinking is subjective, and there's no absolute in anything. And so now, you can absolutely ruin wine, and there's a lot of ways to do that.
A lot of ways, yeah.
So there's no absolute way to make a perfect wine. And so when somebody tries to tell you you have to do it this way, or it has to have this type of oak, or this amount of medium plus toast barrels and blah blah blah, it's just sort of like, well, not really.
That's a good answer. It's a very good answer. So in the past, have you taken the time to go into a tasting room at a winery that you're making wine at? And if you have, is there a particular thing that you'd like to talk about with people? I don't know if you reveal that you're the winemaker, if you like to be incognito, but is there something when you run into people who are newer, just learning, that you like to impart them? Because you have a very common sense approach.
You're setting me up for a real funny joke. How do you know? How can you tell if somebody's a winemaker? And it's just, we'll just have a conversation. They'll tell you in 30 seconds.
So it goes that way, does it?
No. Yeah. I try to be as humble as possible. But I do enjoy interacting. Where are you from? Why are you here? What do you like? What do you don't like? And so I do like to be a fly on the wall a little bit. So, yes, I don't come in and announce, people are always, here's our winemaker and blah, blah, blah. But if I can be incognito, I would rather do that, because I want to know why they like something. Or, if they wrinkle their nose, I want to know why. And so that's the only way to really, understand, because I'm not drinking all this wine I'm making. Somebody else is drinking it. Yes, I'm glad that my palate is not an extreme palate, and I don't consume lots of wine purposely to keep my palate fresh. I'm tasting and spitting all day long, so that's my job. So that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying, when I'm socially drinking, yeah, that's probably only 35% of the time is wine. I'm a big beer drinker. I love a rum drink, and alcohol is alcohol, and there's nuances to everything. They're all related. The flavor component of a mixed drink helps understand the layers of flavoring in a wine, and being able to teach your palate and understand a layered wine, and where it transitions to different flavors. And so that's an important deal. But so I do like to understand what the folks, why they're here, what they like, and so it helps in a lot of ways. And nothing worse than a grumpy winemaker, right?
Yeah, right. I agree. Yeah. Well, and also I think people get to say they met you, which might not seem like a lot to you, but to them, it's a big, here's a bottle of wine, here's Nutri-Rule, I met this guy
who made
this.
And I do get a little embarrassed, and my personal experience is, that can be to your detriment, because when you have an owner/farmer who feels that this is his home and his place, and everybody's gushing over the winemaker, it creates tension if you don't have the right personalities. And sometimes it can go over the top. There's nothing special about me. I'm just like anybody else. I just have an intense curiosity about science and alcohol.
Well, that's good for us, I think.
Right.
So the tasting room obviously is down right now, but normally, is it a place anybody can belly up, or do they have to make an appointment?
The trend these days is to make an appointment. We are open to walk-in traffic. Our driveway sometimes,
it's a little intimidating,
takes care of the riffraff who don't have the intestinal fortitude to make it all the way to the winery. We now have different tiers of experiences, so you can schedule a tasting to come up here to Block 23, or we have some pavilions by the pond to sit there and have lunch. And so you can make an appointment, and we have several different hospitality spots that you could just hang out in. You can drop by. And so we're still open to all of that. But it's always better to make an appointment just if you know you're coming here.
So for our listeners who want to learn about you online, what is your website?
NotreVue Estate.com.
Very good. You got that right.
Yeah. It's Alex, hard to spell, too, with a double E front of a state. So.
Yeah. Alex, under the circumstances, thanks for taking the time, and I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Learn more by visiting NotreVueEstate.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak and Catherine Shearer. Copyright 2019.